Hello and welcome to today's podcast. This is Amber. My website is sacredspacehealing.org. That's sacredspacehealing.org. If you're new to these podcasts, then just by way of an introduction, I am a Reiki master and a shamanic practitioner. I've been running my own healing practice since 2008. These podcasts have been out there in the world since 2013. And my work is focused on core wound healing, life purpose work, sacred union sessions, and transformational calls and readings. The website, again, is sacredspacehealing.org. First of all, just thank you to all the listeners who send me such lovely messages every week. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being open-minded and open-hearted. Some of you have asked how you can best support the work, and that is always gratefully received. If you go to the website sacredspacehealing.org and click on the home button, there will be a drop-down menu that says donations, and you can donate as little or as much as you want. All of the podcasts are free, and I'd like them to remain free, but it does require a lot of investment from me in terms of time and energy and financial investment. Especially if I want to create more podcasts and reach more people. So if you enjoy what you listen to and you want to support the work, that is one big way that you can support the work. That's sacredspacehealing.org. Click on the home button and there is a donations page. So those of you that have been following these podcasts know that I revel in a kind of truth speak. I don't plan my podcasts. I'm not sitting here with a piece of paper or a typed out document. I don't follow trends. I just go with the inspiration that I get. I tend to riff. That's why I'm an R and I sometimes repeat myself. But it's the intention is always as if we were just having a conversation, you know, as if we were in a session together or we were in a circle together. This is how I am with my clients and my students. Obviously, sometimes more focused, but this is how I tend to work. So it gives you a flavor of what it's like were we to ever do any one-to-one work together or circle work together. So today I want to bring up the topic, shine a light on our ideas around femininity. This is such a huge subject and I don't even know where I'm going to start with this, but I'm inspired to speak about it because of an event that happened to me this year that I found triggering and upsetting in some way. But more than that, it was illuminating about how indoctrinated and programmed we are when it comes to femininity, when it comes to what it means to be the divine feminine, the sacred feminine, when it comes to these, you know, sisterhood and women's circles and so on. I feel like we're missing the point. I've said this often, actually, you know, this kind of goddess worship has exploded onto our scene in the last few years, and it's become a beast. It's become an exclusive beast, and it goes against the very grain of what true sisterhood is and what the true goddess is. And it's become shockingly simplistic. You know, if we look at mythology, if we look at the goddesses throughout history, different cultures, different traditions and spirituality, spiritual practices, we can see that the goddess has many different forms. Some are beautiful, some are not. Some are warrior goddesses, some are love goddesses, some are goddesses of the earth, goddesses of the elements. I mean, it's so rich. And I think the reason why it's so rich, this mythology that we have around the goddess, is because it's showing us that the feminine has this ability to be all of these things. She can be all of these things and still be the feminine. She doesn't stop being the feminine because she is the goddess of war or the goddess of death or the goddess of the underworld. She doesn't become more of a goddess because she's Aphrodite. And I think we've become fixated on what it means to be a goddess in a very limited, programmed way that is not going to do us any favors, that is actually taking us away from deeper spirituality, that is blindsiding us, that is leading us down a path of Maya and illusion. So I was in a circle. It was an angelic Reiki circle, and it had new students and revisiting students in the circle, all of whom I had a huge amount of love for, all of whom were women, and all of whom I'd worked with in one-to-one sessions. And we'd done work around sacred sexuality, femininity, the goddess energy, a lot of healing of the womb. And I'd worked with these women individually both in person and in transformation calls, guiding them to find their life purpose, to get empowered, to find their voice, to connect their lower mouths. And we'd worked together for a number of years. So, I mean, for some, it had been like 4 or 5 years on and off that we'd been working together. So I was really excited about having this circle. It was a professional, it was a master level circle. And I was excited to get these women together in a room in the summer, you know. We were in a new space, so I was trying out a new venue to do the work in, and I was in a different space. So it had been personally a very, very challenging year for me, diving into my own wounds around the feminine, around my power as a woman, boundaries, things that had happened to me in my past, and I was in a deep healing process. But that didn't really mean that I couldn't hold space or I couldn't do the healing work. It just meant that I was in a different space. I was more raw, if you like. I was more open. I wasn't going to play the part of the healer. I was just going to be me. And I was enjoying being in that space of, this is me, warts and all. Like, this is me exploring what it means to be in the feminine when she lays down her armor, when she isn't wearing her goddess dress, when she's not adorned. This is the feminine when she is raw, when she's healing, when she's tired. You know, this is the feminine when she's coming out of the underworld and the lower world, and she's finding her power again. And I've always been very open about my journey, my own journey with my clients and my students. Sometimes I probably, you know, students and clients might feel that I've shared a lot, but I only ever share that's going to inspire others, because I never see my students or my clients as my therapists. You know, I have mentors and teachers and therapists that I go to for my own healing and development, which is very important when we are practitioners and we're holding space for others. So that's where I was at as Circle was happening. And I didn't want the fanfare, you know, I didn't want the fancy crystals and the feathers and all the adornments that I'd normally had in Circle, which I have loved and loved. You know, I didn't want that this time. I wanted this to be a kind of raw circle, a circle where we just come together. But we come together because we have the power within us and we don't need the outside accoutrement to say, oh, this is who I am. We're already it. You know, and that's kind of where I was moving towards, this kind of minimalist place in my life where I don't want to wear the badge that says I'm it. I just want to be it. So it was our second day, and it always, as happens in the circles, you know, it's challenging. It's challenging because stuff is coming up for people during the attunements and the healings. People are having to face their stuff. And I think the challenging thing often when you do master level is, and especially those that revisit a master level circle, is that people sometimes think that they've got it nailed. You know, they're like, well, I'm Reiki master, I know this stuff. And actually, that's when the work really starts. Like, that's when it starts to get harder. That's when it gets more challenging, because you're moving through really deep layers now. You know, now that your eyes are open, you can really start to look at the stuff that you would have run away from 3 or 4 years ago. So, we're in circle, and that I can feel that there's tension and people are feeling triggered, but I'm letting that wash all over me. And then a member in circle, a sister in circle, who prized herself on being very much about sisterhood and feminism, you know, goddess circles, empowering women. You know, it's one of the work that she said that she wanted to do was empowering women and doing women's circles. She took a lot of inspiration, I would say, from the work that I was doing and kind of ran with it. You know, it's like she got her spark and ran with it. And in some ways wanted to do the work that I was doing without realizing that the reason I was doing that work is because my life experiences and journey had led me there. But she had a lot of power and integrity of her own, and prided herself on truth speak and prided herself on sisterhood. So we're in circle and we're talking, and she said, oh, I'd come across some of your videos on YouTube, and I'd created these two series on YouTube. One is 21 Days to a Daily Practice, and the other is 21 Days to More Love. And I'd created these probably around 2013 and 14. So a while back, right? You know, like 5-4 years ago. We're now in 2018 as I record this podcast. And the 21 Days to More Love series is now on the website. It's something that people can purchase and they can really dive deep into it. And it is so packed with information. And the 21 Days to a Daily Practice is something that I offer free on the YouTube channel. So she'd been feeling lost for a while, and she said, oh, I went on your YouTube channel and I started going through your videos and they were great, and I found them really inspiring, and I felt really touched by that, you know, that the work is still reaching people. And she said, yeah, it was really surprising. I couldn't really believe that it was you that had done those videos, because you looked so feminine then in those videos. And this silence fell across the room, and I didn't really know what to do with that dagger that had just come at me. You looked so feminine then. I didn't recognize you. You were so feminine. You were so feminine. So the silence falls across the room, and I didn't know what to say. And before I could say anything, another member of the circle, another sister, piped up, and she said, I disagree with you. I think Amber is in a even more powerful and even more in her divine feminine now than I've ever seen her. She's even more authentic than I've ever seen her. I'm paraphrasing, but she said something like that. And I was really, really touched by that. I felt really defended and protected. But I felt very hurt by this comment, very hurt, because it implied that I wasn't feminine in the state that I was in then. Now, the difference between the video me and the me in the room, well, first of all, you know, 4 years. So energy, age, experience, life experiences, events, first of all. Secondly, I think in the videos I'd had different costumes, if you like, that I'd worn each day. That makes me sound like I'd put like a bear costume on. It's not that. I'd you know, worn a different top each day that I'd recorded something. And I'd made a bit of an effort because, you know, I had the camera on me, but everything had been taken in one take. It wasn't edited. There was no fancy lighting. It was all natural light. So it was just about making the best of yourself for the camera. But also I wanted to. I enjoyed the process. And the person that was sitting in the room in front of her now had her glasses on. Probably had my hair tied back, no makeup, tracksuit bottoms, and a comfortable sweatshirt. Because I wanted to be comfortable. I'm holding space for 2 days. I want to be comfortable, not that I have to justify what I wear in a room. So my femininity, or lack of, was being judged on what I was wearing, how I looked, and those two things were saying, coming to the conclusion, the judgment, that the person that was sitting in front of her now was not feminine. But the person that she'd seen on the video clip that maybe was wearing a pair of earrings or a pretty top or a bright colour was feminine. So she had decided that her definition of femininity was the persona, was the person that she'd seen on a video clip 4 years previous. But the woman that was sitting in front of her, that had been through the underworld, the lower world, and fought her demons and come out the other side, still standing, in tracksuit bottoms and a sweatshirt, was not feminine. Now, possibly in her defense, here is a woman that has struggled with her own sense of femininity. You know, what does it mean to be a woman? And possibly had got locked in a matrix definition of femininity is a long flowy dress and long hair, or femininity is, you know, having flowers in your hair and a goddess dress. I don't know. But I found it so deeply triggering and hurtful to have to hear that. And it got me thinking and ruminating. Something that I'd already been aware of in goddess circles was this judgment over what is feminine? What is femininity? Who is a sister and who isn't? It's one of the things that I've talked about in podcasts on feminism, is this kind of hypocrisy, this double standards that we have as women when it comes to ourselves and to other women. You know, we saw it in the women's marches with women wandering around wearing pussy hats on their head, but ostracizing other women, degrading other women, humiliating other women that didn't agree with their standpoint. That is not feminism. That is not sisterhood. Our definitions of femininity, where have they come from? Who told us that being feminine means wearing a dress, having flowers in our hair, looking like a goddess? Yes, we're taking possibly these interpretations from art, from mythology, but who created those works of art? Who created those statues? Predominantly men. Predominantly men have shown us the female form over the years. Yes, there's female artists that have done that as well. But you look at the artwork of Frida Kahlo and you compare that to the artwork that we're often subjected to in advertising or in our media, on our TV screens, on in our magazines, of what it means to be feminine. So have we got lost in a matrix, in a mind programming, that that femininity means how we look? That femininity means a certain energy, that it has to be soft and flowy and nurturing and nourishing and loving and maternal, but that a woman can't inhabit something that's more punchy, more direct, that she can't be a warrior, that she can't rage, that she can't be angry, that she can't grieve, that she can't howl and scream, that she can't be ugly, because the moment she does that, she's no longer feminine. And I think we still see this. We still have this idea that if a woman is ambitious, if a woman stands up for herself, if a woman gets angry about something, she's not being feminine, she's being masculine. If a woman has short hair, she's being masculine. If a woman wears trousers, she's being masculine. If a woman sits a certain way or speaks a certain way or laughs a certain way, or has certain conversations, she's being masculine. If she's too intellectual, she's being masculine. Rather than accepting that these are permeations, these are shades of what it means to be a woman, that there are times in our experience and our journey as a woman that we will be two in our heads, if you like. We will intellectualize everything, that we will be aggressive, that we will go out in the world and make happen, that there are other times when we'll be still, when we'll receive, when we'll hibernate, when we'll nourish, when we'll be maternal, and that a woman can be all these things, that she can dance between all of these extremes, all of these shades. And that actually the definition of a truly embodied goddess is her ability to do all of that, to be that tsunami of the varying shades of femininity. That the goddess is not someone who stands around with a drum and long flowing hair and a long flowing dress, kind of drumming and singing and chanting with a bird on her shoulder. That the feminine can also be standing around in a pinstripe suit and short hair and tattoos and piercings all over her. That a woman can be anything she chooses to be and still remain in the feminine. We are seeing an erosion of what it means to be feminine and a redefinition of it as everything starts to meld into one, as we're almost in an age where people can self-identify as feminine. The definition of what it means to be a woman is almost disappearing. And at the same time as it's disappearing, it's also becoming very strangely defined, that it means that you dress a certain way, you look a certain way, you have to exude a certain energy. And anything other than that is not feminine. To take control is not feminine. To be in charge is not feminine. To swear is not feminine. To burp and fart is not feminine. To watch football is not feminine. To scratch your bum is not feminine. You know, we've got all these strange ideas of what it means to be the divine feminine. And all of these things are deeply disempowering. And what they do is they take away a woman's ability to experience the full facet of who she is. One of the magical definitions, if you like, of shamanism is it pushes us to our very limit. It forces us to test the very parameters of our understanding. It takes us to the limits of what is the dividing line between being in your mind and out of your mind. It pushes you to question everything, to see beyond what we've been told, to see beyond our programming, to see even beyond the physical, not to deny it, but to see beyond it. And so I feel that if this woman in Circle had seen beyond the tracksuit bottoms and the sweatshirt and the lack of makeup and the glasses, she would have seen my true essence. And if she'd seen my true essence, she'd never have made a comment like that, because she'd have seen the whole soul. The soul that happens to be in a female body. Because beyond our definitions of masculine and feminine, ultimately we are soul having a physical experience that just so happens to be in that body. But it doesn't make us just one thing. What we look for is the soul. You know, I often find with animals that I'm not really, you know, like with dogs and cats and domesticated animals, but also those that aren't domesticated. I find that when I look into the eyes of an animal, I'm not seeing that they're an animal. I'm seeing their soul. I'm seeing this whole personality that has chosen to incarnate into the body of an animal in this lifetime, and how restrictive in some ways that must be, but also how freeing it must be in other ways. But I see their soul. That's what I'm connecting to. And so I think the disappointment with this woman in Circle was that at that level of mastery, and after all those years of self-development, she was still unable to see the soul in me. She was still judging me by antiquarian, outdated ideals. They're not even ideals, really. Mistaken notions of what it means to be feminine. I think it's important that we question these, that we question where we're buying into programming when we cut our hair, when we dye our hair, when we wear lipstick, when we wear makeup, when we wear perfume, when we adorn ourselves, when we speak in company, when we speak privately. Are we truly expressing what our soul needs to express at that time? Or are we buying into the notion of what it means to be feminine and we're trying to fit into that notion? You know, to go back to this example, my soul needed to express itself in that way. I needed to dress down. I needed to be raw. I needed to be that. I needed to not have the adornment of healer. I needed to just be your average girl that had come off the street and was going to teach some Reiki. That was my soul expressing itself. But because my soul chose to express itself in that way, doesn't make me any less of a woman or any less feminine. I've never really seen the color of their skin or whether they're male or they're female. I've always really just connected to people on a soul level. Even as a child, I didn't really understand racism. The first time I experienced racism, I was about five and a half, and I was at school, and we'd had to create some artwork, and then all our artwork would be put up on a wall, and I think we were in the school play at the same time, and you know, because of my initials, my stuff, if it's, you know, put up alphabetically, should be at the top of the list, right? If you're going to do it alphabetically, I'd normally be at the top of the list just because of my name. And most of my artwork at school would be at the bottom of a wall behind a door where it would sort of get scuffed and kicked and no one could see it. And in the cast list of our school play, I was right at the bottom of the cast list, even though it was all alphabetical, but then right at the bottom you'd have my name. So I remember being upset about this, you know, like my parents came into school one day and they were looking for my artwork and they were like, "Where's your stuff?" Because they couldn't see it on the wall. And it was literally behind a door. So the door, every time the door opened, it got scuffed and kicked. It was already kind of like, you know, half ripped and covered in dirt marks. I was really upset because, you know, I felt like there was something wrong with me. And I remember my parents getting really angry. Why was my artwork, you know, when everyone else's alphabetically had been put up on the wall, why was I at the bottom? And when everyone else's name had been put up alphabetically on the cast list, why was I at the bottom? And I remember they brought this up in front of a teacher, or they wanted to. And I overheard a conversation and I overheard my parents say, "It's just racism." And that was the first time I realized that I was being viewed differently, that I wasn't just a soul. I wasn't just like everyone else. I was being seen as different. And I found it really difficult. I didn't understand why I was seen as different and that it was purely based on the color of my skin. And the color of my skin meant that I was different in people's eyes and I was being treated differently in people's eyes. And therefore, I was getting this strange treatment that felt very unfair and very unloving and very unkind. That was the first time I experienced a form of fascism. And I feel that that's where we're going with our definitions of the goddess and what it means to be feminine. I feel that the woman in Circle who told me that I wasn't feminine, or I was feminine in the past and questioned my femininity in the present, was expressing a form of fascism, a form of prejudice. And it is unacceptable for us still to be having these prejudices racing through our minds, and yet the purpose of healing is that these things are going to come out, and they come out so we can look at them. Unfortunately, she didn't want to look at this. To keep using this example, I afterwards brought this up and I said that your comments were hurtful in Circle, and she retaliated and attacked me and started criticizing me. And I thought, oh, you really don't want to look at this. You don't want to look at the fact that you actually expressed a very deep-seated prejudice about what it means to be a woman. And you directed it at me. But of course, as we know with healing, she's really just talking about her own sense of confusion over what it means for her to be a woman. Because I was perfectly comfortable in my tracksuit bottoms and my sweatshirt. And I still am. You know, I think we need to find where our comfort levels lie and where we feel discomfort. I've always felt a level of discomfort with being dressed up like a Barbie doll, because it's not felt like a true expression of my definition of what it means to be a woman. Yet I grew up with that definition, with dolls, Barbie dolls and Cindy dolls and, you know, pretty dresses and all of that. But I never really gravitated towards that. That was never really my definition of what it meant to be a woman. For me, being a woman meant being comfortable in my body, being comfortable in the clothes that I wore. And that sometimes that would mean, you know, revealing flesh, and sometimes that would mean not. And sometimes that would mean bright colors, and sometimes that would mean being invisible. But that all of those things don't detract from the fact that I'm soul having a physical experience in a female body in this lifetime. So I think it's important that we sit with these, both as men and women. You know, what ideals do we have about feminism, what it means to be what it means to be female. And so I mean feminism in that sense of what it means to be female. You know, what ideas do we have about what it means to be female? And the ideas that we have about what it means to be female have a knock-on effect to how much we can call ourselves feminists or not. Because if we're judging other women, and I've said this before, we're not feminists, we're just hypocrites. And I'm sure this woman in Circle would have called herself a feminist, but she wasn't, because she was judging me, and that made her a hypocrite. So feminism is about accepting that we're all the same. We're all equal, but we're different. And that's okay. And that women come in many shapes and sizes and colors and permeations and permutations, and that's okay. And that all of them are accepted. All of them are seen. And all of them are allowed to be what they wish to be. They're not discriminated against based on the length of their skirt, the color of their skin, their weight, their bust size, whether they're wearing a pretty dress or not. They're accepted and seen for who they are in their female form, as they choose to express that female form. That, for me, is the basis, is the truth of feminism, if we need a definition. Of course, it's every woman's journey to reconcile herself with what feminism means for her. But my invitation is, if you're a woman, to really sit with your prejudices that you may or may not have towards yourself and towards other women. And what are your expectations of what it means to be a woman? And have you placed these expectations on other women? And if so, then you've probably placed them on yourself. And if you're a man, what are your expectations of what it is to be a woman? And what do you expect from the women in your life? You know, I've had men say to me, ask me, do you wear a short skirt? Do you wear heels? Why is your hair so short? Have you thought about wearing more makeup? I've had all of those ridiculous things said to me, as if wearing a short skirt and heels and makeup makes me more feminine. It doesn't, but it fulfills some kind of bizarre programming that we have, that equals feminine, and that a woman who isn't wearing all those things isn't feminine. I think part of the reason why we have so much issue with women who cover their heads and wear the hijab or the burqa is that we can't see her form. And there is a frustration in that, especially in the Western world, that we suddenly don't know what she is because she doesn't fit into our mold of what the feminine is. We can't see her breasts. We can't see her skin. We can't see her hair. And suddenly we can't say that she's a woman. And yet underneath that shroud, she is a woman. But we are being asked to look at her in a different way. We're being asked to assess her sense of femininity, her sense of womanhood in a different way. And I think many people struggle with that because we've been so mind programmed to see women in only one way or in certain ways, either as sex objects or as mothers or as, you know, little girls, little bimbo girls. And we can see that with, you know, I mean, they're changing all this now, but with, you know, dolls and Barbie dolls and Cindy dolls and all that kind of stuff. We can see that with the games that girls are meant to play and the games that boys are meant to play and all of that kind of stuff. It's programming. And to truly ascend, to truly grow spiritually, we have to get out of this mind programming and really embrace the feminine in all her expansiveness. The feminine energy is linked to the energy of the earth often, although in Egyptian spirituality, the above is the feminine and the below is the masculine. But in our Western world, it's the other way around, and the below is the feminine and the above is the masculine. So by the below, that's the planet Earth. So if you look at planet Earth, if we look at, you know, what that means in terms of being a woman, in terms of femininity, then we see that we see the undulations of the feminine in the land, in our landscape. We see how she's able to encompass earth, water, wind, fire. She's able to hold all of those elements. We see how the planet is able to regenerate, give birth, and destroy, how she can do both at the same time, how she can be fierce and destructive and nurturing and nourishing at the same time, how she demands respect, how she can be raped and abused, but how she will always come out of the ashes and reinvent herself and rise again. We see all of this when we look at planet Earth. We see her expansiveness. We see her ability to transform. We see how she thrives on cooperation, on assisting, on working with others. We see how malleable she is. We see how giving she is. But we also see that there is a dark side to her. There is a side to her that is drought, is death, is destruction, is tsunami. And that will happen when balance needs to be restored. So if we take our clues of what it means to be the feminine from planet Earth, then we can see that we cannot possibly say that being feminine is about a goddess dress or short hair or long hair or mini skirts or lipstick or dresses or any of that nonsense, that it is far more encompassing than that. It's far more real than that. And I think anyone that is looking for the feminine and can't recognize her in other forms is not real. They're sort of plastic people. They're kind of carbon people, carbon copy people that haven't really become actualized as warriors, as true masters. And they will always gravitate to that which is another carbon copy in projects, in partners, in friendships, in tribe, in their work. It will always be a little bit flimsy. It's the difference between, you know, shopping high end and shopping budget. And, you know, budget's great. Temporarily, you get your fix, but it's not going to last. It's all the difference between eating organic and eating non-organic. You know, it's the difference between something that's going to last the test of time and something that will last a few seasons. And the definition that we have of femininity right now will last a few seasons, but the truth of it will stand the test of time. The website is sacredspacehealing.org. That's sacredspacehealing.org. If you feel that I would be able to assist you in some way, it would be my honor and privilege to be able to help you on your journey. Until the next time, so it is and so it shall be.